It is well established, well accepted at this point, that the Mozilla Megacorporation, the corporation behind the Firefox web browser, is, for lack of a better word, a bit of a bully. That's just what they do. They even have a stated objective to silence, censor, and, quote, do more than deplatforming of anyone that they disagree with on the internet. Bully. But did you know that their bullying ways go back to pretty close to the beginning of Mozilla Corporation, and certainly back to the beginning of Firefox? I want to take you on a historical tour now. Back to the beginning of when Firefox first got its name. This is an article up over at the Lunduke Journal. You can read it at lunduke.locals.com, or you can sit back, relax, and allow me to read it to you right now. Nowadays, everybody knows the name Firefox. Utter that name and nearly every computer user will instantly know you are talking about that web browser from Mozilla Corporation, even if Firefox market share has dropped down to less than 3%. But did you know that Firefox was not originally named Firefox? In fact, that Mozilla web browser settled on that name through a series of bad decisions, bullying of another open source project, and a game of word association. Seriously, you wouldn't think it, but this is kind of a wild story. Product naming, the drama. It's true. Now let's go back. Our story starts back in 1998. The source code for Netscape, once the most popular web browser in the world, man, do I miss Netscape, had just been released as open source under the Mozilla project. And over the few years that followed, funded by AOL Time Warner, several web browsers were created which used that core Mozilla code. Web browsers that, for the most part, have long been forgotten. Web browsers such as Galleon, Kmeleon, Qbat.i, and Skipstone. Yeah, you remember those, right? Many web browsers for many platforms, all built using that core Mozilla web rendering engine, yet there was no official web browser. There was the Mozilla application suite, which is sort of a continuation of the Netscape communicator suite, but there wasn't an official standalone web browser. And by 2002, it was determined that that needed to change. So enter the Phoenix. On September 23rd, 2002, the very, very first release of the official Mozilla web browser hit the internet. Version 0.1 of Phoenix. That's right. Oh, look at that. Look at that bird. It looks like it was drawn with a crayon. It looks like a flaming bird drawn with a crayon. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful. On Phoenix, oh my gosh, what a fantastic name. So much symbolism. A new web browser rising from the ashes of Netscape, which appeared to be losing the browser war to Microsoft's Internet Explorer. An inspired choice. Phoenix, born again, rising from the ashes. There was just one teensy-weensy little problem. There was already a web browser with the same name. It was known as Phoenix Firstware Connect. It was a web browser developed by Phoenix Technologies that ran entirely inside their BIOS without needing an operating system, which was pretty cool. So that's right. Mozilla, the people who spent years building web browser rendering engines, had no idea there was already a web browser named Phoenix when they chose the name. If only there had been some sort of, I don't know, engine they could have used to search the web. It really is worse than that, though, because there was a tremendous amount of press coverage of the Phoenix browser, the one developed by Phoenix Technologies, before and up to that period of time. The only way they could have not known this was out there is if they did not pay any attention whatsoever to tech news, to the IT industry, or to web browsing in general, and that they had never heard of or used a search engine. Lycos, Alta Vista, Metacrawler, Ask Jeeves, what are those things? It is absolutely phenomenal that they got this so astoundingly wrong. It is baffling to the mind. So, Phoenix Technologies didn't much care for this, obviously. And they did not want Mozilla using their name. Either Mozilla needed to change their name, or they needed to buckle down for a legal fight they were absolutely 100% sure to lose. Mozilla may have had the backing of AOL Time Warner, but Phoenix Technologies was big enough with a strong enough case to take them on. I mean, this wasn't just a guy in his basement coding away on some hobbyist thing. This was a big company with big company money making a big company web browser. And then the Mozilla Corporation tried to steal their name. So what did they do? Luckily, someone at Mozilla managed to get a hold of an encyclopedia, or possibly a really good thesaurus, and found another word that was often used in place of Phoenix, right? So they played synonym. They played a game of word association. So on May 17th, 2003, now notice it took them how long? How long did it take them here? It took them from September of 2002 all the way until May of 2003, almost a year to do this. This is crazy. On May 17, 2003, the Phoenix browser was renamed to Firebird. Ta-da! Firebird. Oh my heavens. Which was incredibly handy. This was super convenient because Mozilla didn't even need to change the logo. That big, red, flamey, crayon-drawn bird. It could stay. It could stay. Huzzah. they're saved. The day is saved. And this time around, the Mozilla team had learned to use a search engine to see if another web browser already had the same name. Aha, they're learning. They're learning. Unfortunately, it turns out that there was already another open source project sponsored by a different company using the Firebird name, the Firebird database server. But, and here's the wild part. Here's the wild part of this. Mozilla simply didn't care. They didn't care that they were grabbing the name of another open source project and stealing it. They didn't care. That just wasn't something they were worried about. They decided to adopt the name of the existing project anyway, even though they knew that they were stealing the name. They didn't even contact the other project first because they were Mozilla, a part of AOL Time Warner, and they didn't feel like they needed to do such things. So let's talk about this for a minute. Having two open source projects, both running on the same computer platforms, right, using the exact same name and very similar imagery is not ideal, to say the least, especially for the smaller project that came first, the Firebird database server. Here's their logo. You could almost mistake that for a variation of an early Firefox logo. I mean, this is the Firebird database logo back then. That's what it was, right? So having a new project copy your name, then plaster the internet with links to their new project, all backed by AOL, it would become almost impossible to find information about the original project, and that's exactly what happened. They were effectively suffocating the original project that they stole the name from. Way to go, Mozilla. Now, this was obviously a fight worth having. The Firebird database server folks needed to defend their trademark, almost as a matter of survival. If they couldn't stop Mozilla and AOL and Time Warner from plastering the internet with their new, Firebird logo and their Firebird links, there was no chance that any search engine was ever going to turn up results for the Firebird database server. It just wasn't going to happen. Unfortunately, Mozilla was part of AOL. Part of Time Warner, a huge mega corporation with a vast army of lawyers. And the company that sponsored the Firebird database server was a little tiny company called IB Phoenix with a limited budget. And what's worse, no army of lawyers. They were the little guy. And Mozilla was an 800-pound gorilla. IB Phoenix, the Firebird database people, they were simply too small to be able to afford a fight with the likes of AOL Time Warner. Obviously, IB Phoenix was asked nicely Mozilla to not use their name. No, Mozilla said no. After Mozilla refused to change their name, IB Phoenix did the only thing they could think of, and they pleaded with their developers and users to email Mozilla and ask Mozilla to please stop using their name. And Mozilla again refused. Quote, we're still going to use the project name Mozilla Firebird, stated a Mozilla representative in an interview where they attacked the database makers. In fact, Mozilla went on a public rampage, basically going after the people who made the Phoenix database. It was fairly brutal. But luckily, at that time, the public was beginning to see what a bully Mozilla could be. Things were not going well for Mozilla at this point. Users were beginning to boycott the Mozilla web browser. I don't know if a lot of people nowadays may not remember this, but this was a thing. There was a very real chance that Mozilla was going to be driven into oblivion back then because they were just bullies and people weren't liking it. The bad press was getting severe with headlines like Phoenix flies from frying pan to fire and Mozilla's Firebird gets wings clipped and whatnot. There was tons of them. I linked to a few of the of those news stories inside this article. It was a very wild time. And then Mozilla plays some word association again. After nearly a full year of Mozilla using the Firebird name, knowingly and purposefully harming the Firebird database server the entire time, and doing announcements of how horrible the Firebird database people are for wanting to use the name that Mozilla so rightly deserves to be able to use, even though they decided on it later. It was crazy. But Mozilla finally caved to the public pressure to change the name of their web browser. Essentially, Mozilla was faced with a choice. Either the public was going to revolt and burn Mozilla to the ground, or Mozilla was going to change their name. So Mozilla changed their name, but only after harming Firebird database as much as they could. On February 9th of 2004, the name of the Mozilla web browser officially changed to Firefox with the release of the 0.8 version. Now, why did the name become Firefox? And this is not a joke. Because it sounded similar to Firebird. Seriously, this is it. Firefox is a name for a panda, which had absolutely nothing to do with Phoenix or Firebird, but it had the word fire in it, so it was good enough. A fire animal. That was what they were going for. So they went with it. And well, that and Mozilla felt like there couldn't possibly be any software company, product, or project with that name. The Mozilla leadership were pretty keen at this point on avoiding yet another trademark dispute before their web browser had even reached version 1.0. I mean, come on, this has been crazy for them. And Mozilla even made sure to register the Firefox as a trademark in the USA. Whew, they learned their lesson, right? They're good to go. Almost. They forgot about the United Kingdom. And apparently the internet. This is crazy. So while the Mozilla leadership felt like the name Firefox must be totally unique in the software world, it really, really wasn't. This is another example of feelings don't make reality. Just because you want something to be true, it doesn't make it true. Mozilla wanted them to be able to use Phoenix. They wanted that to be an original name. It wasn't. They wanted Firebird to be theirs, even though someone else used it first, and they felt like they deserved it. But that just wasn't the case. It wasn't what the world was going to allow. And now they had Firefox, and they really felt like it should be unique. Did they search for it online? There's no chance. There is zero chance that they took off and used a web browser to search for this, because this would have come up. They would have gotten results for this. Let me scroll down here a little bit. In fact, the name Firefox had been used for almost a decade. Almost 10 years by a software company in the United Kingdom named the Charlton Company. Here's a screenshot of their trademark registration going back to 1995. Yeah, Firefox registered, not by Mozilla. To make matters worse, the name Firefox was specifically being used for, and I kid you not on this, quote, communications and connectivity software. Are you joking me? That's kind of sort of exactly how you would describe a web browser. It's not just that they copied someone else's name. They copied someone else's name again, who was already making the same kind of software they were. How ridiculous is that? Oopsie daisy. Now, this would be like a new company creating a carbonated soft drink named Coke, but thinking it was okay to use the already in use name because, you know, they wanted to. I could go out and make a carbonated pineapple fizzy drink and call it Coca-Cola. because I feel like I deserve to use that name. Like, oh my heavens, I would get sued into oblivion, and rightly so. But Mozilla, man, this is just how they roll over and over and over again. They demand that everyone else cave in to whatever their wishes are. But rather than get involved in yet another public fight over the third name that they've chosen, Mozilla tried to settle things behind the scenes. Eventually, by sometime in 2005, Mozilla reached a deal with the Firefox trademark holder to use the name. Now, what the terms of that deal are remains unknown. My guess is the terms of the deal mean it stays quiet, so we won't know. How much money changed hands here? What did Mozilla give to the company in the United Kingdom who held the trademark for Firefox to use it? Who knows? But Firefox it shall be. So there you have it. Mozilla went through three different names for their web browser, all before they even hit version 1. They completely failed to look around for others using their new name multiple times. They bullied an open source project they stole a name from, and eventually they screwed up their renaming too many times and simply had to strike a deal with someone whose name they copied. It's a wild tale of incompetence, bullying, and not knowing how to use a search engine, or just using it but not caring because you feel like you're better than everyone else. Yet after all of that, Firefox managed to become a nearly household name, a brand recognized around the world, even if less than 3% of computer users actually use it. So there you have it. It's one of those fun little tidbits of history that somehow, despite not happening that long ago, has been lost. Our collective knowledge just seems to have stopped talking about Firefox's beginning and how it started by bullying open source projects, by stealing names from other corporations, and just kind of generally being a jerk. I feel like we should remember this. When we're covering Mozilla and Firefox nowadays, we need to remember who they are, what's in their DNA as a mega corporation, because make no mistake, they're a mega corporation at this point. We got to remember these things. Little details. This, of course, is one of many articles up over at the Lunduke Journal. You can go to it at lunduke.locals.com. And in fact, if you just go to lunduke.com, just lunduke.com, what you get is Lunduke Journal Link Central, which gives you RSS podcast feed links, how to get a hold of me, contact information. But it also gives you a bunch of kind of curated articles. While there's a huge, huge number of articles that are available to subscribers, there's also a lot of just free articles that you can go and enjoy. Go to lunduke.com. There's exclusives, stuff that you don't find covered from any other tech news outlet on earth, and then just a lot of computer history articles. If you really want to be the expert in the room on computer history, the pieces of computer history that don't get covered in the history books, that don't get covered by most tech journalists, you want to go over here. You want to find out who the real first computer programmer was. It wasn't Ada Lovelace. You go over to lunduke.com. You want to find out about Wenden DOS or how Tim Berners-Lee copied HTML from a pre-existing hypertext language, or who really created the phrase open source. It had nothing to do with the open source initiative, I'll tell you that much. But again, these are things you won't hear elsewhere in detail, documented fully. Go to lunduke.com to check it out. And again, thank you to all the subscribers of the Lunduke Journal at lunduke.locals.com. I couldn't do this without you. I absolutely could not do this without you, because the Lunduke Journal does not take ads. The Lunduke Journal does not dig sponsorship deals from mega corporations, which means that big tech, and heck, even little and medium tech, have absolutely no sway over the type of content that's produced at the Lunduke Journal. It is literally, not just figuratively, but literally the last bastion of completely honest, fully independent tech journalism on planet Earth. So go to lunduke.locals.com, subscribe if you want to help support what we do and keep us ad-free. Or if not, just read the articles and get a whole heck of a lot smarter. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, nerds and nerdettes across the inner tube, I do declare, end broadcast.